Hello and welcome to the second episode of our podcast, In the Shadow of the Evening Trees. As we said before, I'm Dave Von Ebers.
I'm Jennifer.
And she just goes by one name. It's kind of like Sting or Cher.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes Jenny. Rarely Jenny.
Rarely Jenny.
Only when I'm mad. No, that's not true. It's Jen, not Jenny. That's her full legal name.
Yes.
Jen, not Jenny.
Just Jen for short.
Genevieve.
Yes.
So in our first episode, we talked about what we hoped to do with the podcast, kind of like the, you know, subjects we would talk about, the issues we would discuss, what we hope we'd accomplish, that sort of thing. And I said in the first episode that we would perhaps talk a little bit about, I guess I used the phrase origin story, kind of like my origin story or our origin story. How did we get to this place where we're in what we call a mixed orientation marriage after, you know, 26 years? Obviously, that's a little unusual. Not everybody would quite understand how you get there. So I thought we would talk a little bit about that. And you can chime in. You can chime in, but sort of the elephant in the room, I guess, would be me, not because of being overweight, but because I'm the one who makes this unusual. And I guess I would say, I mean, people can come into a situation like this all kinds of ways. I suppose someone could, you know, people could intentionally get into a relationship knowing that their orientation was different, and that's cool, that's fine, there's nothing wrong with that, but that was not really the case with us. I didn't really fully, you know, understand or know who I was when we met. By the way, just an interesting side note, I saw today, you know, the actor Cal Penn?
Yes.
Who has been in a number of things. He was in the I'm blanking on the name of the film franchise, but he's been in a number of things, and he was also worked briefly in the Obama administration. He is gay.
I did not know that.
And he just announced that he and his partner are getting married, and so that kind of caused a little bit of a stir on social media because not everyone knew that. And I saw that he he said, fittingly enough, that, you know, he came to the realization later in life. So it's kind of a fitting sort of intro to our show to mention that, that just came out.
I did not see that.
Or just, you know, that was just news today. Anyway, so what I also thought, Harold and Kumar. I'm such an idiot.
Oh, yes.
It was the Harold and Kumar movies. I'm so sorry. I had to look it up on my phone. That's the advantage to doing a podcast, is you can cheat and look things up on a phone
or
a computer.
And you just don't even know.
Right, and no one would know unless you confess like I just did. but it's also interesting. So we're actually recording this on Halloween night. So that's scary. But it's also, I think...
And we're not wearing costumes.
We're not wearing costumes. Although a friend of mine...
We should have said we were.
A friend of mine, my friend Pat, who I followed on various social media platforms for many years, posted a picture of himself in a kind of like recliner chair holding a beer. And he said for the 21st year in a row, his Halloween costume is dad with a beer.
Nice.
Not beer, duh.
Yeah, beer.
So anyway, I think it's kind of appropriate to record this on Halloween because, you know, Halloween is all about, you know, disguising your true self, right? Dressing up, pretending to be something that you're not,
right?
Which is kind of funny. But it's actually not, you know, it's actually not that simple. Like, I never went through life like saying I was going to pretend to be something I wasn't. It's just that I didn't really realize who I was. But I thought of another Halloween connection today as we were sitting here handing out candy.
Lots of candy.
Several years ago, this has to do with Elton John. There's always, it's everything that we talk about will have either a sports connection or a music connection. And I should preface this by saying I love Elton John. I was a huge, huge Elton John fan back in the 70s when I was like in elementary and middle, junior high school and all that. So this is not going to be in any way, shape, or form a slight to Elton. But I thought a lot about him today because years ago, when we were living in a different house in a different neighborhood, I downloaded... Well, let me back up. Let me back up a step further. So Elton John, when I was in like junior high school, which was the mid-70s, he was the biggest star in the world, right? He was huge. He was everywhere. And when I was, I think I was 13 years old, I got the Goodbye Yellow Brick Road album for my birthday. And I'd already been out for a few years, or at least a couple of years. But in any event, I got that for my birthday. And I love that record. And so fast forward to sometime in the sort of early 2000s or mid-2000s, I downloaded the album on Halloween because I wanted to be able to play Funeral for a Friend over and over and over again as we were giving out candy to the neighborhood kids because it's such a perfect Halloween song. It's got the creepy, you know, the howling wind and the church bells off in the distance and the real dramatic organ and everything like that. So I downloaded it for that purpose, not because I necessarily wanted to relive my junior high school years.
Right.
But I loved the album. But years after that, when we were working out one time, I think it was on a Saturday, and we're in the basement and I'm on the stationary bike and I'm looking at my phone trying to find something to listen to. And lo and behold, I have Goodbye Yellow Brick Road on my phone because I had downloaded it for Halloween. And I'm like, I love Elton John. I should listen to this record. I haven't actually listened to it in ages. And so I'm listening to it. And it's a great album. I still love it. There's a lot of great songs on the album. But what's funny when you listen to it with the perspective of many, many, many years removed from when it came out is you realize that in that time period, in the early 1970s or the mid-70s, he wrote an awful lot of like super like macho hetero songs. I mean, you know, you think of Elton John with the wild costumes and the big glasses and everything
right.
like that. But that was kind of, yeah, but that was like, that was a thing in the 70s. So it wasn't something that you necessarily would look at him and go, oh, that guy's gay.
Right.
You wouldn't necessarily have thought that in 1974, 1975 or whatever. There's a lot of songs on this album. I'm just looking at it. A lot of songs on this album that I do not think Elton John would do today.
Probably not.
And granted, of course, you have to realize back then he wasn't writing the lyrics. He had a songwriting partner, Bernie Taupin. So, you know, even the titles of the songs came from the lyrics. But I'm looking at some of these songs and I'm listening through it a few years ago and it's like, there's Sweet Painted Lady about a woman engaged in the oldest profession in the world. There's a song called Dirty Little Girl. There's All the Young Girls Love Alice. Oh, not All the Young Girls. That's the actual lyric, but the title is All the Girls Love Alice. And of course, probably the biggest hit on the album, or one of the biggest hits on the album, was Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting. So he projected this kind of like super macho hetero image. And again, you know, you look back at the costumes and you might think, oh, come on, you couldn't have possibly thought that, you know, he was straight back then. Everybody thought he was straight back then. Everybody did. And, you know, and look, again, I'm not criticizing him. I'm just saying that was the image that he projected. So a few years later in the late 70s, when I'm in high school, he gave this interview. And I don't honestly recall whether it was in in Rolling Stone, or maybe it was a television interview. I want to say it was a Rolling Stone interview, but a few years later, he gives this interview where he says that he's bi. It was like this earth-shattering news at the time, and I knew so many people who were huge Elton John fans, you know, and there was some, some of the guys that I knew who were, I know a good friend of mine for years and years is a local police chief. He's still a huge Elton John fan, to his credit. He never gave up on EJ. But at the time, we were all confused, let's just say. And then, you know, a few years later in the 1980s, when the, you know, I'm Still Standing period came out, by that point, he was out completely. He was, you know, acknowledged that he was gay. he eventually married his partner. They've been married for decades now. They have kids and everything like that. And that's how people think of Elton John today. And that's great. And I, like I say, I love him. I'm not criticizing the music on Goodbye Old Brick Road. But I'm just saying, you know, so you have to understand it was a different era. Now, granted, I'm quite a bit younger than Elton John, but still, we are, in that sense, we are kind of from the same era. It was a homophobic time, whether we like it or not. I know people don't like hearing that, but it was, you know, everyone was homophobic back then. Maybe not gay people. Okay, that'd be a little unfair to say everyone. But the fact is, I mean, it was the norm. It was what was accepted. Not that I'll make it right, but I'm saying that's the environment we grew up in. So, you know, you can't really expect people in that environment to just be quick to accept, you know, who they are, right? Some people, you know, were more likely, here I am saying, you know, over and over again, I apologize for that, but, you know, some people were quicker to be able to accept it and come out and be, you know, very open about it, but not everyone functions that way. So that's kind of like, you know, that's the background you grew up in. Like when I was in junior high school, when I was in high school, even in college and later years, you know, you feel different in some ways, but different doesn't necessarily, it doesn't tell you who you are. It's just, you know, you're not the same as other people. And it was a strange time for sure, but I just didn't have a frame of reference. Right. Everyone thought that you shouldn't be that way, whatever the heck that means. But I mean, that was the prevailing, you know, the prevailing view. Right. So you're growing up in an environment where every message you get is that you're not supposed to be like that. You know, some people are going to overcome that. Right. And more power to those people. And I have huge respect. You know, there were certainly gay people that I went to school with. I didn't know it at the time. They came out much later, but at least they were much quicker to accept it and acknowledge it. And I have huge respect for that. But you have to understand that that wasn't going to be that way for everybody. It just wasn't. It couldn't have been.
No.
So I look back at that, you know, sort of like the evolution of Elton John over those years. And I think, yeah, you know, I get that. I mean, that's what I sort of went through many years later. But the resistance to accepting who you are in that environment is really not that surprising, I don't think. And then, you know, you add to that, it's not just that you got all of these messages about, you know, what's right and wrong and all that sort of thing, but it's also the way people stereotype. And this is something I get really aggravated with, because it's something that even a lot of well-intentioned, non-homophobic people do is, you know, people assume stereotypes about gay people. And it, I suppose it's not just gay people. It's sort of like everyone in the broader LGBTQ plus community. But people make assumptions that they think are positive assumptions, you know, but you can, if you're not a person who fits these stereotypes, even though these stereotypes may in some ways be well-intended, then you don't know where you fit, right? You're already kind of in a state of denial about who you are, and there's this image that other people created about how gay people are supposed to be. That you don't match. You know, I sort of joke about it. It's like, look, you know, I'm not someone who's going to listen to Broadway show tunes. I like Bruce Springsteen. I like The Clash. I like Tom Petty. You know, I like rock music. I love Prince, so I'm not going to deny that. But, you know, you make assumptions about the kind of music a gay person is supposed to like. I also happen to be it's not just music. I'm a huge sports fan, all right? I am. I've always have been. One of my brothers called me.
And you have a great memory for that.
Yeah, that's, we'll get into that in another time, but that's a sign of senility, of course, when your long-term memory is intact and your short-term memory
goes. Right.
So my memory for sports may be a bad sign, not a good sign. But anyway, when I came out to my family, one of my brothers called me and he goes, I just have one question. I said, what's that? He goes, you're still a hockey fan, right? Because at the time, this brother of mine is a huge Chicago Blackhawks fan. I love the Blackhawks. We watched more hockey than anyone rationally should have.
So amazing.
Right. This was at the time, you know, from 2010 to 2015, they won three Stanley Cups. And they hadn't won one in my lifetime. They won before that time period, before 2010. The Blackhawks' last Stanley Cup win was in 1961. So in my life, I was close, but in my lifetime, it hadn't happened yet, right? So it was a very exciting thing. But we were in the middle of all that where they were doing really well, and they're going to the playoffs every year, and they're winning the Stanley Cup here and there. And so my brother was, I don't think he was legitimately concerned. I actually think he just meant that as a sort of a disarming way to talk about it. Right. But it was kind of funny. So I'm like, yes, still a hockey fan. But that, you know, and he didn't mean anything stereotypical about it.
No.
He knew what I was going to say anyway. But I think, you know, that's part of the problem. And so I guess another thing I would add about this is, like, there's no harmless stereotype, right? You may think that you're being supportive by perpetuating stereotypes. Well, you know, it's great that gay people are artistic and flamboyant and this, that, and the other thing. But you have to recognize that, like every other demographic group or every other, you know, group of people, however you look at them, there are no monolithic groups of human beings, whether it's within a family, within a demographic group, whatever. Everybody is different.
And it's like, so why would that be different? Because you're gay.
Right. And it's so hard when you're young to try to understand it, even today, but certainly back then it was. And when there's all these messages that you get that are, you know, either it's wrong to be gay or you don't fit the stereotype of being gay, you're just stuck. And, you know, for me, it was like you feel odd around other people. You don't feel like you fit in because you have this innate sense that there's something different about you. You're not mentally prepared to understand it. And you're also getting all of these messages that tell you that you don't kind of fit that group either. And it's really isolating and sad, you know? It's a very lonely thing to say, I know I'm different, but I can't be in that group over there because A, I'm being told that group is bad, and B, I'm being told that group has certain characteristics that I don't have, you know? And it's tough. And I'm not here to complain. I should point something out because I've talked for far too long anyway. I should point out that I never got like really negative, like homophobic messages at home. My parents didn't say things like that. You know, we were raised Catholic, went to church all the time. I never once heard a priest talk about any of this sort of thing from the pulpit. Never once. You know, as teenagers, all of us, my group of friends, we were homophobic. We told homophobic jokes. We said all the terrible things that you can kind of imagine. And I'm embarrassed by that. I did it too, right? But despite the fact that we did that, I will tell you, my friends, my straight friends from back in those days, are actually some of the most accepting people I've ever known.
Yes.
And we had other gay friends who came out long before I did, even at a time when it was much more, you know, sort of dicey to do that. And my straight friends, some of whom are very conservative, I should point out, they were completely accepting and 100% accepting. So when I'm talking about, you know, growing up in this homophobic environment, it's not that my friends would have rejected me. It's not that my family would have rejected me. It's really much more fundamental than that. It was just the environment we all grew up in. We didn't know that it was wrong. I'm not making an excuse. It was still wrong. I'm not defending the things that we might have said or thought back then. But when you're when you're, you know, maybe kind of a weak person, I hate to put it that way, maybe I was a weak person, or whatever it was, where I couldn't actually see myself for who I was, I'm in an environment where you get all of these negative messages. It's no one person. It's not some joke a friend made or something that my dad said or anything like that. It's not that. It's the entire environment that you're in that pushes you to deny who you are and to think that you couldn't possibly be that person. And you know, the funny thing is, I got to a point where I recognized that homophobia was really bad, and I would stick up for gay people and think of myself as, oh, you know, I'm one of the good straight people because I recognize that this is wrong. And I still couldn't accept who I was. You know, that's a weird thing.
It is. And it's hard to, like you said, just be in a position where you feel like you don't match to, or there's no group for you to like right. hang out with, or just say, like, here I am, you know, kind of thing.
And it's really difficult to express, you know, to explain, I should say, how ingrained this all was when we were growing up in the 70s and even in the 80s in college, when I did know gay people, I had gay friends and so forth, but it was still, you know, I had one good friend that I worked with. Well, actually, it was a couple that I worked with, these two guys who were in a relationship. One of the two of them was in a fraternity in college. This guy was really brilliant. He was a year ahead of me. He was brilliant. He was an accounting major, and our college happened to be one of the top accounting programs in the country, still is, has been for many, many years. And he was in a fraternity. My friend was in a fraternity. And he told me this story about how he came out to his fraternity brothers, and they were very supportive in the context of the time, but they asked him to leave the house.
That's sad.
Yeah, they were like, well, oh, we totally support you and we think it's great, but of course you'll have to move. And he was conveying the story to me in a positive light, because in the times we were living in, this would have been 1982, 83, in the times we were living in, that was considered to be a positive. Like, they didn't attack him or humiliate him or tell him he was a terrible person or that he was going to hell or this, that, and the other thing.
It was like the best way they could accept
right.
him.
Right. They accepted him by kicking him out of the house but saying that they still liked him.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember, and maybe I'm giving myself more credit than I deserve, but I remember kind of thinking, well, that doesn't seem quite right, you know. My friend Scott's like, oh, yeah, you know, I understood, and I moved out, and I found an apartment, and I'm like...
That's horrible, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was more confused then than I would be now. Like, now I'd be like,
yeah,
that's outrageous. You got to be kidding me.
Exactly.
What's wrong with these guys? But at the time, I kind of understood where he was coming from, where he accepted their reaction, but I also, in the back of my mind, I knew it wasn't right, you know. But anyway, my point is just that that's the kind of environment. That was when things were starting actually to improve. It was still that kind of an environment. So, you know, I mean, if you have other things going on in your life, if you're struggling with, you know, I don't know, mental health issues or whatever, and you're living in that environment and you're getting all these negative or conflicting messages, you know, you got to understand that it's not that unusual to kind of follow the Elton John path, right? To pretend, and not just pretend, but really, really, really try to convince yourself that you're that person. You know, like, I was a big sports fan, and I often think about this. Like, sports, for example, was a way for me to communicate with my straight friends. They didn't expect that of me, but it was something we could have in common, right? So it gave us this common language where we could talk about football or baseball or whatever, and I felt like I fit in. The same thing was kind of true with music. One of my older brothers, who sadly passed away, was a great guitar player. And I'm not saying he would have judged me negatively, but music was our language. Like, it gave us something to talk about where we were understood one another and we're on the same page. So, you know, you find ways to get through these weird, challenging times by, you know, you find the common thread. You find the common language with other people, because the thing you don't want is to feel like you're an outsider. And that was just a way of functioning for a long period of time, right? It was a way of getting through it. It was a defense mechanism or whatever you want to call it, but it was a way of
belonging,
right? And that is you know, that's a challenging thing. And it's hard when you're young. It's hard when you're a teenager. You're always dealing with awkward situations when you're a teenager, right? And, you know, like I say, more power to people who were able to see more clearly than I was. More power to people who are able to accept themselves for who they were at a younger age. But that's not going to be that way for everybody. So, you know, that's how I get to the point of getting married, having children, and, you know, just kind of evolving through this process and then finally coming to the realization that, no, that's who I am, you know.
And that's amazing.
Well, I don't know if it's amazing, but it is what it is. But I mean, you know, so if you're wondering, I don't know if any of this explanation helps, but if you're wondering how someone could get to a point in their life where they're in their 50s, you know, at least Elton John was much younger than that when he faced his truth, so to speak. But if you're wondering how someone can get to the point of being in their 50s when they before they could really accept it, I mean, that's sort of like the conditioning. That's what it does. And that's why you gotta, you know, let people be themselves.
And I think at least now for like if this was if you would have been in that same situation in 2021, it would have been a completely probably different.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and you know, and here's another thing, and we're running a little late on time, but I'll just throw this out because I suppose you could listen to all this and think, well, that's really, you know, that's really sad. And you know, there's definitely sad aspects of it because like no one wants to feel like an outsider, no one wants to feel like they don't fit in. That is sad. But you also have to look at it if you're in my position that, you know, how do you get, I wouldn't have gotten to a point in my life where we were married. We have three kids, mm-hmm. you know, we have a pretty great life. A lot of those things would not have happened if I had come to the realization of who I was at an earlier age. So I can't feel bad about that.
Oh, heck no. Yeah.
Right. So not that it's, you know, it's prejudice of any sort is never a good thing. People not being able to accept themselves, is that's never a good thing. But the way I look at it personally is, I'm glad to be where I am. And I'm, you know, especially to have the family that I have, right? So
that's the other thing. How you have for to look at it. All of our friends and family, nobody, I mean, everybody accepted it and everyone was very kind, so, which is amazing.
That is true. I can't complain. I'd like to complain. I have other complaints about them, but that's not one of them.
That's a different episode.
Right. Yeah, that's another episode. Just you wait. No, but kidding aside, and that's the thing. It's like I leave this with this final thought, thinking about like friends and family. I've seen this thing, and probably other people have seen it too, about Eeyore on Winnie the Pooh. Someone, I don't know who it was, and I apologize for not giving credit, but someone pointed out that, you know, Eeyore was technically clinically depressed.
Yes.
Right? But his friends always invited him to everything. They
checked on him.
Yeah, they checked on him, right. They treated him like a real friend, despite he was sometimes unpleasant to be around, whatever. And really, you know, that's kind of the life that I had. My friends probably thought I was somehow different or whatever, but they never, ever, ever, you know, turned their back. Same with my family. So, you know, even though we were living in this weird time that was, like I said, you know, fundamentally homophobic, it was great to have those friends, and it gives you some breathing room till you get to the point where you actually can recognize who you are. So I got to give them a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, because I do feel sorry for so many kids these days who their family like disowns them. Like, it's like, how crazy is that? You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that, and that's definitely, those are the kinds of things we definitely want to talk about as we go further.
Yeah.
But we're coming up on half an hour.
Yes, we are.
So that is episode 2. We'll have much more to talk about.
And we will have this hopefully on Spotify and iTunes Music, but it's always going to be a link on our website, which right. we will post.
More ways of listening to come.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.